From the headquarters of Swinnerton, this is the Modern Built Environment podcast, featuring exclusive interviews with world-class thought leaders, executives, and civic leaders committed to a better and more beautiful built environment. Established in 1888 and built on a foundation of integrity, trust, and collaboration, our history has prepared us for this moment. Possibility is limited only by our imagination. We know what tomorrow can bring because we've seen thousands of tomorrows and are prepared to shape what comes next. Pride of ownership, peace of mind. Our podcast is hosted by Tom DiOro of The Modern Architect at KZSU at Stanford University. Go to swinnerton.com/podcast.
For our guest today, we're honored, really, and excited, definitely super excited for our guest, Clark Manis, architect and principal of Heller Manis, an architecture firm dedicated to more than 25 years of developing a diversified, client-oriented firm that is a design and sustainability leader in the profession. You can find him on the web at hellermanis.com. Again, hellermanis.com. Hello, Clark.
Tom, how are
always
you?
Always a pleasure. Oh, I'm
wonderful.
Well. Always a pleasure.
To see you.
Nice and
to
you
see
too.
Healthy face.
Yes, both of us. Very good. Clark, where do we begin with this? You know what? What quotes, I don't think I've asked you this before, but what quote or mantra can you recall that matters to you or you kind of think of every now and then that kind of carries you through the day or even through circumstances of life, personally and professionally, if you can think of one or even two?
The sick and twisted one is no good deed goes unpunished. So many things that we see in the world that we're doing for good, and I've been in circumstances where you were involved in a really great thing and it went bad and sideways. So that's my sort of joking thing. And then in this season, I am forever a fan of teams, you know, team play, team stuff like that. Watching the Bay Area San Francisco Giants basically be literally, who are these guys? To these guys have the formula that they won the World Series with. So that is really just really heartwarming to see that that's really possible when people work together. So, you know.
Clark, where did that come from? Obviously, you're professional, but where does that and why does that matter so much to you?
Would probably say being the son of a psychologist, maybe it's one of those things where you try and find places for people to feel good, motivated, you know, excited. And that's somehow it's always been like that. You know, I feel like I've achieved a lot in my life, you know, but I certainly know that there are people who motivated me, who excited me about what they were doing, who, you know, if I certainly was not the smartest in the group, I sort of felt like, you know, hey, I belong, you know, so we all feel that way. And I had a validation this morning. I was asked to participate in a course that a professor at the University of Buffalo School of Architecture and Planning was running about students and master's program and thinking about architecture and how they go and what they do. And being a student there in the second class that this program created, a very noteworthy program in a SUNY system like the California system, it was really great to sort of reinforce to students who are in the beginning of their career that, you know, networks are great, teams are great, you know, we can't all be Frank Lloyd Wright thinking it's our way or the highway. So anyway, so that's sort of how that a life approach actually, you know, I managed to sort of validate that life approach on multiple instances. So anyway.
If you can draw a parallel to those, which you stated earlier, Clark, with who are these guys? And then they just come out and just are remarkable. Can you draw a parallel like the Giants now?
I guess if you go, you know, the Mets, you never think of the Yankees that way. Who else? You know, wild card teams, you know, the Cubs came back from the sort of, you know, voodoo magic that had been played on their heads for what, nearly 100 years, right? You know, we're like, oh, we can never win. We're, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I think that that's really a function of the mindset of the people who are championing those people. So anyway, that's my sense.
Yeah. And if you can see a project that you've worked on where owners thought, eh, you know, we'll give Clark and group a shot, and we like what they're doing, but you know, we'll see what happens. And then they just are blown away in the most beautiful way. Can you share with us? You don't have to name names, but if you could name projects.
I would say a lot of the projects. I mean, I would say that the firm's evolution was to try and work on many different project types. Okay, that's really, you know, we all debate about, like, you know, I don't want to do the same thing over. I want to do something different. You know, just like you want to be able to talk to a range of people and get different perspectives and stuff like that. And I think as a result of either the initial approach about doing that and being able to be involved in whether it was a residential high-rise building, whether it was a residential low-rise building, it was a high-rise, it was a renovation, you know, they offered us the opportunity, because I think it's a sort of thought process that you demonstrate to people that they're willing to take a chance on you, I guess, Tom, is the best way to describe it. Or they're willing to say, yeah, I know you accomplished, there's no doubt about that, but, you know, are you going to listen to me? Are you going to incorporate things that I think are necessary, or are you just going to sort of do what you think is right and not care about that? So in my mind, there's a lot about that sort of chemistry with clients that sort of enable you to do different project types. And I would say in my career, the firm's practice career, the range of projects that we have been privileged to work on is really amazing. The latest one that's under my watch is a 1915 Beaux-Arts building at the end of Lake Merritt called the Henry J. Kaiser Convention Center. So 5 years ago, we pursued it, selected it. So with the owner, we have this program to transform a theater, not transform, to refurbish a theater, old historic theater, Calvin Simmons Theater. It was really great. It's very historic. And then conversion of an arena that used to be for 8,000 people, hosted people like James Brown, Grateful Dead, Martin Luther King. You know, it goes on and on, from orators to musicians. And that will then be a space that can be converted for the use of the arts community to be able to use for their support space or stuff like that they need in terms of delivering, whether it's ballet or symphony or other arts groups. So anyway, so that's a sort of good example of, you know, you offer that up and you can't say, I've done exactly that. So the only way you achieve stuff like that, in my mind, is really that sort of team attitude. So I, you know, to your point, I look at the Giants, their local history, you know, being a fan, you know, I just watch and you either go like, yeah, you'll never get it together, or wow, you beat everybody's expectations. You know, a new manager, right, who everybody was suspect, right? And now it's like, wow, this guy's good. We have his faith versus your dad. So that would be my take.
Yeah. If you can touch on that, the range of projects that you've done, is that something you purposefully pursued, came to you, or a bit of both?
I would say circumstance in some instances, you know, I would say aspirational for sure. Okay. Aspirational to work on different projects. You know, there's some people who like, hey, I just like to do this project. I think it was an aspirational view that the firm always embodied, is the challenge of bringing expertise and working on projects in different locales. I mean, we've been fortunate to do that. Overwhelmingly, though, it's been in San Francisco, which has been sort of our backyard, and truly an amazing honor as I sort of look back and watch a city transform itself for better or for worse sometimes. Hard to say. You never really know where things are going to go. But the one, to your point, that probably both on a sort of professional advocacy role, on the removal of the freeway. I don't know if you remember that, removal of the freeway and planning for the area in Rincon Hill, and then being able to be the architect projects there. That neighborhood now that in-town, high-density neighborhood fulfills so many of the desired aspirations of helping our issues on climate change, you know, living in urban centers. You know, certainly we've learned a lesson on the pandemic, you know, creating activity for people in terms of that, delivering 30% affordable housing in a district, being near transit, you know, all the things that we lust to do in support of creating good urban environments or good environments where people can live and enjoy. So anyway, so that sort of was, for me, is probably the best example of the variety. And so not really clear about whether you stumble upon it or your momentum gets you there or you aspire to do it. So I think the aspiration is always necessary. I think sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. And then being able to continue to champion that path in terms of doing that. And by championing that path, you at least equip yourself to be able to try and do more of that versus doing the same thing. It's, you know, I don't want to say that it's easy to do the same thing, but it comes more, it's more predictable and there's less variables versus I need to think out of the box. I need to color outside the lines. I need to understand how this fits or this doesn't fit. And I think, I'm not quite sure whether this was probably before this, but I now have a night job and I am an Oakland planning commissioner on their coming on their sixth year as a commissioner. And so that has been a very rewarding and very eye-opening experience to be on the sort of side of looking at issues that are land use or architecture in a community that I've lived in for decades. So
outstanding. You're listening to the Modern Built Environment podcast, powered by Swinnerton. We're talking today with Clark Manis, principal of Heller Manis. For more information, feel free to visit the website at hellermanis.com. That's hellermanis.com. Clark, if you can touch again back to the Oakland Planning Commission, and how has that also helped your practice, as well as just your communication with people, clients, and just the community in general?
So the normal role for, you know, an architect involved in the projects is to appear before planning commissions in the city in which they're pursuing the approval by a body. And our practice in San Francisco, you know, I've done it enormous amount of time, you know, hundreds of time, and also been out in the course of doing projects on community outreach to describe to people what a project might be, because you know that the visual nature of a sketch or the scope of a proposal, you know, if you're not trained, becomes much more challenging because you don't feel comfortable reading a plan or section or elevation. So not something I pursued in any way, not something that I really felt was anything that I would pursue wanting to consider doing, but I got to know leadership in the Oakland Planning Department, and they made a point to me, is like, you know, you practice in San Francisco, you do buildings, major buildings as a part of your everyday existence. And, you know, we have projects that come before us and we need architects. And I ended up being, they couldn't remember the last time an architect had been on the commission, to put it simply, which was like, really? So I accepted the honor. I met with the mayor and the mayor interviewed me about my interests and stuff like that. And I was then ultimately appointed to the commission. But the thing that you asked, which I think is the most interesting, is that if you're in that role, you have to be a good listener. You really have to try and listen to it. It's easy, you know, like a judge or somebody as a legislator to make a decision and either I care about your opinion or I don't. And for me to be able to sit on the other side, you know, because I understood the presentation side and what the objective was, I feel like I can fast forward to, we don't need to play a lot of games. We both have the same aspirations, you know, good, simple process, good architecture, and let's build it. Okay. So really a very basic kind of thing. And I've stayed with that over the course of the nearly 5 years, going on my sixth in doing that, and learned a lot, heard a lot of heard issues that maybe I was aware of, but I heard more vividly everything from fairness in zoning, which obviously is always in everybody's mind, to issues on diversity in hiring or inclusion or good character infill projects that fit the urban context. They're all a part of that formula. So as a pretty much an end decision maker, you feel the responsibility to be open and listen and be able to be fair in helping to fulfill the decision and not be sort of stuck in politics, which is really, you know, sometimes that happens. And I think, you know, my tenure in this role and the people that I've met, the other commissioners I've served with, has been just really a great experience, great life experience. I would chalk it up there. And, you know, you never know when you enter into a obligation that doesn't pay you anything, whether the rewards are actually part of the end result.
Yeah. Now, about the politics in architecture, and I've heard it before, I don't know who said it, but actually architecture is politics. I don't know if that's accurate or if it's just my own mind thinking of it, but share with us what it means, just the politics of architecture, maybe not to our times, but actually in any time, like how and why is there politics involved just in architecture itself?
Well, I mean, the first thing is, as you would attest, is really at the most elementary level, it's about style sometimes. Like, I like modern, I like classical, you know, I like mid-century, you know, I like concrete, you know, those are things that are probably not political, but are the nature of that. And then architecture gets woven into the land use decisions. And to your question, really what happens is that politics makes a play about either the appropriate policy that's being fulfilled. Is there enough landscaping? Is the building too tall because it's too tall near its neighbors? Does it have enough affordable housing? You know, and then you get into the esoteric stuff that's not politics, which is the glass is too dark, or the building is too foreboding, or it's not good at the ground level where there's a ability to accommodate, you know, retail and people's activities. So you're correct in your assessment that in many instances, and I find this is true in a lot of the projects that we've worked on and been on the other side, separating the political discussion about land use, which is embedded in architecture, and taking the architecture portion sort of out of that equation. So in the political side, you resolve the land use, the building envelope, the number of units, the type of units, all the sort of quantitative things that people want to make a bargain in the world of politics on. And the architecture side is a sort of soft side that people are able to, they don't have to raise the issue about politics unless, like Trump, who tried to create a style out of federal because he didn't like modern architecture. He only liked classical, but that's the most extreme version of somebody dictating a style. But generally communities in those places, in my mind, and if you're astute in being able to evaluate that as a project goes forward, you can help to, I don't want to say neutralize, you can help to compartmentalize the way the decisions get made. And, you know, in based on my own experience and now sort of sitting on the other side as a commissioner, I weigh the, you know, let's get those quantitative things resolved. So there's no real debate about this. There's real clarity and specificity, and it's acceptable to everybody. And you don't have to waste your time and money or blame yourself or blame the architect for the building should have been green instead of blue, or the glass should have been clear instead of dark, or that, you know, or there should have been a driveway in this location. Those are not political things. But the other parts, the land use side, highly political. You see it, you certainly see it entirely across the Bay Area. This is one of the most complex regulatory environments to seek a land use approval. And architecture just becomes the enclosure right, of what that looks like. And yet it's one of the most important things.
Clark, outstanding. You're listening to the Modern Built Environment Podcast, powered by Swinerton. We're talking today with Clark Manis, principal of Heller Manis. Our public service announcement for today is for the Center for Architecture, the AIA San Francisco, the Center for Architecture and Design. The Center for Architecture and Design is dedicated to creating a publicly focused dialogue on architecture, design through a variety of public programs, exhibition, lectures, film screening tours, and more that are open to all communities. For more information, visit the website at centersf.org. Again, that's centersf.org. Clark, as we close out our show, can you share with us about the center and its meaning and you know, why you're so excited about it as well?
So across the country, many or probably two handfuls of cities over time have created gathering places, that's the best way to describe it, or centers that really focus on architecture and design elements associated with being able to provide the public and the profession with greater learning opportunities associated with this. So, you know, one of the most remarkable ones is the Chicago Architectural Foundation. And it is probably, it's sort of on, again, it's a companion to the AIA in Chicago, but they function independently because one really focuses on the profession. The other one really is about public outreach. So for me, the center in San Francisco, which has been a sort of virtual thing for more than a decade, has now sort of found a place to have a physical home in a historic building at the ground floor, accessible to the public and everybody, and greater sort of interplay with the profession as well. And, you know, your sponsor, you know, Swinerton, certainly is a part of the Bay Area family. And they, amongst what we are trying to do, is gather all of our colleagues in this entire industry and say, this is what we need to do. We all work on things like that. We all value each other, everybody from those people who build the projects, those people who develop the projects, and those people who supply things for projects. And so its goal is really to help continue to make those connections, offer continuing education and exciting programs, very similar to the one that you've been doing for quite some time, to educate people about architecture and how they can feel more comfortable about how to talk about their environment or what to do or how to get involved. But for me, it's really one of those things that this is its time and it's a perfect opportunity to do this. So the space that it would be going into in the first curtain wall building in the United States and the Halliday building, Willis Polk as the architect, couldn't be a better location. It pretty much says, you know, this is the history of architecture in the Bay Area and also represents the historic landmark architecture that was created that's being used all over the world.
Outstanding again. Clark, it's been a real honor and joy having you on the Modern Built Environment Podcast today. I hope you come back soon. We really got to have you because you always leave me wanting more. I hope
you're good. And Tom, what a wonderful program you do. Great dialogue and great issues that you precipitate. So again, thank you for having me on.
Thank you very much, Clark. I really appreciate that. You've been listening to the Modern Built Environment Podcast, powered by Swinerton. You can find us online at swinerton.com/podcast. Our guest today has been the great Clark Manis, architect and principal of Heller Manis, an architecture firm dedicated to more than 25 years of developing a diversified, client-oriented firm that is a design and sustainability leader in the profession. You can find them on the web at hellermanis.com. Join us again next time when we welcome another leading architect, engineer, builder, manufacturer, or civic leader committed to building a better and more beautiful built environment for healthier cities, communities, and lives. Thank you. I'm Tom Dior.
The Modern Built Environment Podcast is recorded at the Swinerton headquarters and on location. The recording engineer is Stephen Blatton. The executive producer and host of the Modern Built Environment Podcast is Tom Dioro. And we're all assisted by Mr. Eric Foster. This is the Modern Built Environment Podcast by Swinerton.